Hi, this is Joshua Johnson, host of the Shifting Culture podcast, and I just want to say we have a giveaway on our Instagram page. So go to Instagram at Shifting Culture Podcast, and thanks to Brazos Press, we're giving away copies of The Understory by Lori Ferguson Wilbert, Empowered to Repair by Brenda Salter McNeil, and Fully Alive by Elizabeth Oldfield. The episodes are fantastic. I hope you listen to them all. But then enter to win before May 28th, because the winner will be announced May 28th. Go to the Instagram at Shifting Culture Podcast to enter.
It's about realizing that we can have faltering faith. We can have tiny faith. We can have faith that's shaky and wavering. But it's whom we put it in that really makes all the difference. And I think up to today, I still remind myself of that life-changing experience in all that I do, because it reminds me, if God could use me when I was so broken back then why should I be afraid of what He can't do?
Hello, and welcome to the Shifting Culture podcast, in which we have conversations about the culture we create and the impact we can make. We long to see the body of Christ look like Jesus. I'm your host, Joshua Johnson. Go to shiftingculturepodcast.com to interact and donate. And don't forget to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast app to be notified when new episodes come out each week. And go leave a rating and review. It's easy. It only takes a second, and it helps us find new listeners to the show. Just go to the show page on the app that you're using right now and hit 5 stars. It really is that easy. Thank you so much. You know what else would help us out? Share this podcast with your friends, your family, your network. Tell them how much you enjoy it and let them know that they should be listening as well. If you're new here, welcome. If you want to dig deeper, find us on social media at Shifting Culture Podcast, where I post video clips and quotes and interact with all of you. Previous guests on the show have included Craig Greenfield, Jamie Winship, and Jesse Cruikshank. You can go back, listen to those episodes, and more. But today's guest is Wajia Tam. Wajia is a multi-award-winning international humanitarian, doctor, and speaker. She was selected for Forbes Asia's inaugural 30 Under 30 list, has been featured in numerous international media outlets, and is the founder of Kite Dreams Ministry and Kite Song Global. In this episode, Wajia shares her incredible story of discovering Jesus and following Him despite facing many obstacles and setbacks along the way. Wajia grew up in a Buddhist home in Singapore, but had a powerful encounter with God as a teenager that set her on a journey of faith. She shares about her experiences serving in Nepal as a young woman and how God provided in amazing ways. Wajia also walked through great difficulties like depression, an eating disorder, and major spinal surgery, but trusted God through it all. In this conversation, she offers wisdom on discerning God's voice and taking small steps of obedience, even when we feel too small. I know you'll be inspired by Wajia's story of God's faithfulness and how He could use our pain for His purposes. So join us as we discover how we can be faithful and take small steps of obedience. Here's my conversation with Wajia Tam. Hi, Wajia, welcome to the podcast. Really excited to have you on. Thank you so much for getting up early and joining me on the show.
Well, it is my pleasure, Joshua. It's 5:30 here in Singapore, and there's no better way to start the day by talking about Jesus. So,
well, that's good. I'd love to start early in the morning, at 5:30 in the morning, to talk about your story with Jesus. I know you grew up in a Buddhist home. How did you find Jesus? What was your journey like of discovering who He was and starting to follow Him?
Wow, that is a question. That's quite a loaded question. I never expected to become a Christian, because growing up in an environment with many different kinds of gods and idols, we believed in all kinds of different philosophies and gods. And I remember we would drive up a couple of hours almost every year to Malaysia, where we would worship, like, you know, a, 100-foot-long kind of sleeping Buddha. And it was right at that moment when I was maybe when I was 16 or so, that while I was praying on my knees in that temple, I felt this stirring inside of me, like a voice telling me, I am God, but I am not here. And that was the first time, I think, I felt like I had a connection with God, and that he wasn't in the form of a statue or somebody I had to sacrifice, give up things for, burn joss sticks, go through all kinds of rituals. And that's what began my journey of faith. But nothing sealed my faith like the first time I went for a mission trip. And that was when I went by myself. I made a couple of cold calls to organizations, and I asked a very seemingly like foolish or naive question. I was like, you know, is there anywhere in the world that you need help in? I would love to go. And they said, oh yes, there is a place in Nepal. Right now there is the Maoist uprising. There's a lot of political instability. All our volunteers pulled out. Do you want to go? Because the help is still there, you know, it's still needed. And of course, I told my very conservative, traditional Asian father about it. And having had a daughter who has never stayed out later than 10 p.m. all her life, not even for prom, he said, no, are you crazy? And I remember just telling God, like, God, if you are real, you have to show me, like, you have to change my father's heart. And that was when I think began a real relationship with God, because I started talking to a God I never knew. And even then, all that time, I still felt doubt. I kept feeling like, God, maybe you're real, maybe you're not, but I'm just going to keep talking to you and see how this pans out. So it's kind of like a testing water kind of thing. And the amazing thing was, my father, who has only a tiny company of 5 staff at the time, had one staff who happened to know a Singaporean missionary who was returning from Nepal for furlough, which is a couple of weeks. And my dad met her, and she managed to convince my dad to let me go. Yeah, so that was the beginning, I think, of my journey of faith. And what happened after that, I think, was life-changing. And so that began my faith in God, knowing that he is real, and he does listen to the littlest cries of our hearts.
I think sometimes that's opposite of what happens as you go down the journey with faith. And I know in the West, there's a difference. I've, you know, as someone who leads a missions organization myself, and we have workers all over the world, we have people that hear from God, do what he says, and really amazing things happen because of that. And a lot of times, you know, you're probably speaking to some in the audience where they want to believe that. They want to say, hey, great things will happen when we listen to God, but I don't know if it could happen for me. If you are talking to somebody now, what would you say about the God who is alive that can speak to them and that could lead them into greater pastures and greater places? What would you say for them to take a step towards seeing God like that?
Wow. Thanks for asking that, Joshua, because that was exactly how I felt as a 17-year-old in Nepal, feeling overwhelmed, feeling tiny, feeling like a nobody. In fact, I grew up mostly feeling depressed, awkward about myself. And I just thought, man, you know, if God is God of the universe, why would he waste time with me, you know? And I remember while I was in Nepal, I just knew that it wasn't a coincidence that we were evicted traumatically overnight. Like, I was staying in a children's home with like 30 other girls who had been abused and abandoned. And I got to know these missionary house parents, and I was shocked to know that every year they would face like an eviction from the new landlord because there was such a stigma on unwanted girls. And at that time when we were evicted, I was just so shocked. I didn't know what to do. So we literally moved the entire home, like down to the littlest girl who was 3 years old. She was packing her socks and her underwear, and we had to dismantle all the beds and the kitchen all by ourselves. And I just looked at the world unravel around me and asked God, like, God, if you are real and you care for these girls, then would you allow me to do something for that? Like, I had applied to medical school, but I hadn't heard back. I had no credentials. I didn't know any Christian. I didn't have like a, you know, Christian legacy where I had a network of people or pastors to fall back on. And I was like, God, what am I supposed to do? And all I just prayed was, God, if you are real, again, testing God, again, like, you know, full of self-doubt, right? Jesus, are you real? You know, I was like, God, you have to show me that you are real and you hear our prayers. And so all I did was just say, God, help me to do something for this girl. And in the next couple of days, a little story about a girl and her kite and all the pictures were just downloaded in my mind. And I just knew I had to go back and paint them. So when I was dropped off at the Kathmandu airport in Nepal, I remember being dropped off and then I ran back to the pastor's car and I said, Pastor Eric, I said, you know, I have this idea and it's not, but you think if I published a little picture book and use it to raise funds for a new home for the girls, then maybe you guys won't need to move anymore? And he was like, yeah, of course. You have to do it. You have to believe in it. He's like, that's what we just need. It's a permanent home. Joshua, you wouldn't believe it, but when I went back to Singapore, I literally was led from one stranger to the next. And before I knew it, like in the next 3 months, Kite Song was published, my first picture book. And in the following 3 months, like over $100,000 was raised. And in my living room, I have this picture of the girl seated in nearly the same positions, but 10 years apart. And that picture forever reminds me that in spite of how little, how broken, how unwanted that we are, that as long as we give God the smallest cries of our heart, that God is real and He does listen. And I think that's what the book Dream Brave is about. Like, it's a combination of all these experiences that I've had with God, anchored on Hebrews 11, showing us faith really is. It's not about the size of how great your faith is. It's about realizing that we can have faltering faith. We can have tiny faith. We can have faith that is shaky and wavering. But it's whom we put it in that really makes all the difference. And I think up to today, I still remind myself of that life-changing experience in all that I do. Because it reminds me, if God could use me when I was so broken back then why should I be afraid of what He can't do?
A lot of people hear that and go, that is incredible. And I have some dreams in my heart, but I'm afraid to take those first steps to enact something. Like, there is a small cry in my heart. I want to see this happen, but I don't know if I can do that myself. As somebody who is a young woman there that didn't have much, that all you really had was, you know, your artistry, that you were able to paint some pictures, to get that published, raise $100,000 for a home. What would be some first steps for people to say, hey, I can start to say yes to the dreams of my heart and follow what God has for me?
Wow. That's such a great question, Josh. You know, I think when we think about dreaming, we always think about dreaming big. I think it's just the standard of our culture. And that can be so intimidating. But what I really want to encourage people to do is just to start by dreaming small. In fact, that was the first working title of my book. Instead of Dreaming Brave, it was Dream Small, you know? And I just love the idea of starting small, because God's kingdom is so topsy-turvy. You know, the way up is actually the way down. And people look back at like my trajectory, like a couple of years ago, I was deployed with the United Nations and the World Health Organization COVID-19 specialist in Africa for a good number of weeks. And when people look at that, they say, wow, YJ, you're really on this path of like forever dreaming big, achieving big goals, you know, like how did that happen? And I always have to remind them and say, you know how I got to working with the WHO and the UN? It wasn't through, you know, networking or like striving and hustling, which I actually did while I was at Johns Hopkins, when God sent me there. There was another miraculous story how I even got there. But when I was there, I just hustled. It was like hustle culture. I'm like, I'm going to change my own life by climbing up my ladder, you know? And God just shut every door. In His mercy and grace, He shut every door. So sometimes when we don't get the dreams we want, it's actually God's way of protecting us. He doesn't want us to carry a narrative of, I can do it all, and the world's got to depend on me. And while I was at Johns Hopkins, he actually broke that. All he wanted me to do was start a little nonprofit called Kitesaw Global based on what I had done. And, you know, when I started that nonprofit at Johns Hopkins, I told the Lord, I said, God, this is so not my dream. Like, you know, it's not glamorous. Like, I actually came here, like, on scholarships. I had to answer to the board. And I'm going to go back to tell them that I started a what? Like, seriously? And God just told me to just obey him, like, step by step. And so with that little nonprofit, what happened was that, of course, I never predicted COVID-19 would break out when I came back. I didn't predict that because I was away from Singapore for a good number of years, that it would be so hard to fit back into the system. Because when the pandemic broke out, I had no idea what I was supposed to do. And there I was with this roster of public health, not knowing where to fit in. And I just told God, what happened to those big dreams that you gave to me? I'm now like overwhelmed and intimidated. And even though I had all these credentials behind me, it just seemed like what you said, you have this sense of inertia. And even though you feel like you know what you got to do, but you just can't. The funny thing was, tens of thousands of low-wage migrant workers were infected with COVID-19. And I got a request from a mentor who said, Waija, can you just draw some health booklets for us? Because migrant workers, they're all coming in with like more than 8 different diverse languages. We can't communicate with them. It's so overwhelming for them. There's a lot of anxiety, possibly unrest. Can you just draw some pictures and get them translated? And I scoffed at the request, Josh. I'm ashamed to say I thought that was too small for me. And I just told God, like seriously, what did you not hear me when I said I wanted to work with the WHO and the UN? Like, it was for such a time as this. Like, hello, I'm still here. And it was through saying yes to that little request. My husband was the one who reminded me. He's like, Waija, I see that look on your face. He's just telepathic with me. And he said, look at the devotional today on Oswald Chambers. He said, it's Ecclesiastes 9:10. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. And I just knew it was for me. It was a devotional for that day. And so I started furiously drawing and illustrating. And because I set up Kitesaw Global as my nonprofit, that was actually, we had the infrastructure to translate and to print and to just turn this around in the shortest time possible. We were able to do it before any of the healthcare institutions or clusters could do that. And before we knew it, we were printing tens of thousands of different kinds of booklets and then posters. And one day I just got an email from the chairperson of the World Health Organization steering committee in Singapore. And he's like, are you a professional cartoonist? Because we want to hire you. So I talked to him and he finds out I'm a doctor and he puts me in charge of like nationwide health communications with migrant workers. And it was through that I got to working with the World Health Organization and the United Nations and then getting deployed with them. So when I look back, Josh, what that tells me is that when we have big dreams in our hearts, the road there isn't straightforward like we think. And it isn't about how much I can do for God, but rather how much we are willing to humble ourselves for him when he shows us those opportunities to say yes, one baby step at a time. So maybe we have a dream to serve orphans in a developing country, but are we even willing to foster children in our own city? Maybe our dream is to, start a huge initiative like that's nationwide. But in the first place, are we willing to do something small for our community at our church? And that's something I keep reminding myself of, because I'm always enamored, right, by these glamorous, wow, adventurous things that God does. But I always remind myself of that day when I was in the elevator and my husband just looked at me and he rolled his eyes and he's like, I know you're going to say no, but just remember, God's watching you and you just got to stay faithful, So thank God for good husbands, eh?
Yes. Yes. It's great to have somebody in your life that could actually speak some truth to you so you could walk in it. If you would talk to somebody now and say, how do I discern the voice of God knowing that he's telling me to do this small step? Oftentimes we, because, you're talking about big dreams, we forget to do the small things like you're talking about. But God is speaking his voice and saying, this is what I want you to obey. How do we discern his voice and then say yes to that and move forward in it?
Wow, that is such a great question, Josh. I love being on this journey, discerning God. One thing that has really changed my life is Henry Blackaby's book, Experiencing God. And in it, he talks about how discerning God is about understanding a couple of things. Firstly, finding alignment with the Word, finding inner peace through prayer, finding alignment or discernment and wisdom through community, and then mentors, and then looking at the circumstances around us. So I've listed about 5 things that we can use, and I always encourage people to use them as sort of like a toolkit from which we can weigh and discern how God is speaking. Because sometimes we can fall into the error of like saying, oh, wow, just one mentor told me this, or this one circumstance is so divine. Like I met this guy at the supermarket twice. He must be the one for me. And no, it's not. It's about using our circumstances or the inner peace that we feel or something that we've read in the Bible and using that to weigh against all the other 4 different pillars, as I call it. So with these 5 different aspects, I feel like God gives us a really good toolkit from which we can kind of weigh in and discern his voice, because he does speak actively to us. So one thing I've loved, of course, it makes that journey so much more challenging, but it's also exciting even as we learn to challenge ourselves to discern. And I also want to encourage people to realize it's okay to make mistakes. You know, it's okay to discern and then realize that, oh my, I actually took that a little too literally from that mentor or from that friend of mine. Or maybe that advice from that person wasn't so good because I obviously missed out something that the Bible was trying to say. Or maybe I looked too much into the circumstances and perhaps it was no more than a coincidence. And yet, even through all these experiences, God's grace and mercy covers us. So I always like to think that it's okay to err on the side of being courageous just to take steps forward. If not, we'll just be living in the fear of making a mistake.
I think one of the biggest things that God says throughout the Bible is do not be afraid. Have courage. I am with you in what you're doing. You know, when we got married, my wife's sister was able to paint a banner for us that has a quote, "The great stories go to those who don't give in to fear." And that's what we have been trying to live by, is living into great stories and not giving into fear. How can somebody, now that they have discerned God's voice and saying, okay, I might know what the first step is, but how could somebody not give into the fear that they have of failure or, you know, this isn't going to work out, or maybe this isn't even God's voice? How can we step into those great stories and not give into fear?
Whew, Josh, as you are sharing that, it reminds me of what my family is walking through right now. We've been praying over the past year to relocate to Tanzania in Africa. And that has been a dream for us to relocate to serve a long-term mission in a developing country. As you know, Josh, one of the hardest things is after you've decided in your heart to actually move forward with it. Because at so many points, I think we wanted to back out when we faced opposition, when people were, you know, accusing us of being irresponsible, or, you know, when you just look at your home and how much you are leaving behind, or even your career, you just feel, you get cold feet. And one of the things that I've learned growing up is people often tell me, like, don't tell the public, don't tell people, because then when you lose face, so to speak, like in Chinese, there's a term called dulian. It literally means like you're throwing your face away. It's like, it's so shameful. You know, if you tell someone your dream and then you change your mind. So the idea is maybe don't tell anyone, keep your dreams to yourself. I mean, what's the big deal? Just tell God. But one thing I've appreciated is community. That word that you use, Joshua, is so powerful, because when we first shared it with my husband and he resonated, and then we decided, you know what, we're going to share it with some mentors, with some friends, and then write it on a prayer letter, it just became more and more real. And at the time when we wanted to pull out, we just felt like, you know what? We have shared our story with enough people that it's not going to be as easy as just flipping a switch and just saying, okay, good night. We're going to wake up in the morning and just stay in our comfort zones. It's just not possible anymore. And so when one thing leads to another and you surround yourself with a community of people who believe in your dream, I think that makes all the difference. So this month is actually my last month working. I couldn't believe it, like saying goodbye to my job. The interesting thing is also that the more people you tell, the more naysayers and opposition you're also going to get. So that's one thing I have to give people a heads up for. On one hand, community is wonderful. On the other hand, we've got to be prepared for pushback. Because so many people told me not to quit my job. They said, you know, continue hanging on, get some income at least until you actually move. Because right now, we're in this period of uncertainty. And that's what I talk about in a number of chapters of my book, Dream Brave. It's that a lot of times, like between dreaming a dream and actually fulfilling it, are many, many years of tension and uncertainty. And it's almost like walking in a fog. So right now, our work permits in Tanzania have been delayed. There is a big question mark on whether it will even get through. And here I am, having quit my job, getting, you know, housing agents to look at our house, renting it out. And I'm like, am I crazy? But I think about it. Yeah, and I think, you know what? Obeying God is just about taking one step at a time. Like Psalm 119:105 tells us, your word is a lamp to my feet, a light unto my path. And I just keep telling myself, you know what? It's just one step at a time. One step at a time.
Yeah, well, let's take one step at a time. And I think that's really helpful to say, you know, not going to give into fear. And I know in your story that you've experienced a lot of different setbacks. And a lot of people, I mean, some people are listening to this and like, man, everything is working out for her. This is wonderful. So, but tell us some of those setbacks, some things that have been really difficult and how you work through them to continue to move towards what God has for you.
Right. Wow. Oh, Joshua, when I was in medical school, wow, this is such a loaded question. Yeah. Talking about trials and tribulations, I've got plenty. So, I mean, you'd think, oh, this girl is a Fulbright scholar. She got a Hopkins. So, you know, she's got everything fine and dandy. It's like hunky-dory, right? I scraped through medical school. I almost failed, Joshua, because I was supposed to be warded for anorexia and depression. I literally crawled through medical school. In my fourth year, I remember thinking that maybe the easy way out was to jump off my university dormitory balcony. And I just told myself that there was just no way that I could graduate. And I was a burden to everybody around me. There was just no way out. There was so much guilt because I was already a believer by then. And I thought to myself, how can Kite Song and all those wonderful things have happened? And then suddenly I plummet into this abyss. And actually, that's not uncommon. Like when God gives you a dream sometimes, your life can seem to spiral out of control. And sometimes that's part of spiritual warfare. Sometimes that is real. And when I walk through those dark days, I remember just holding on to God and asking Him to make Himself real to me. And so I remember one day as I was praying, God gave me a vision of me speaking on a stage to an international audience, and I was in America. And I literally laughed at myself. I'm like, really? Like, I'm like nobody. Like, people find it hard even to remember my name. It's such a mouthful in like a Western context, you know? And I'm like, are you kidding me? And I kid you not, Joshua, like about 7 to 8 years later when I was at Hopkins, I received a phone call from a stranger who said, Aija, like, would you come speak at our conference in Nashville? And I was like, what? And she was like, our conference is called Hungry for Hope. And it's about giving hope to people who have been through eating disorders and depression. And it was like, you've got to be kidding me. How did you even get my number? And she's like, I got a copy of your little book called A Taste of Rainbow. And that was the second book I had done while I was recovering from anorexia. And that little book was passed to her from a friend of hers who was a sister-in-law of somebody who was the faculty member and a colleague of my supervisor. It was like 4 degrees of separation or something like that. And that was how I got to Nashville and started speaking. And that showed me how God uses our pain for a purpose. Our stories, our dreams are amplified when He brings us through the depths of the valley. And even right now, as I'm talking to you, I feel like I'm in a place of gratitude because just a couple of months ago, I was suddenly scheduled for spine surgery in my neck. So I actually have a huge scar that you probably can't see right now, but they literally had to pull my trachea, my breathing tube, apart from my, like, the main artery that goes to my heart, and they had to take out part of my spine and replace it with titanium. And I was like, God, I'm at the peak of my life right now in ministry, in my career and everything. Like, how did that happen? So when that happened, I just fell into this valley for a couple of weeks. I stopped. I mean, I was an itinerant speaker. I was like speaking every other week. You know, I was up on my feet. I was at the gym every morning at 6 a.m. doing like high intensity exercises. All that just went boom. It disappeared. And I thought to myself, like, wow, God, what are you doing? And I felt God speak to me about the treasures of darkness. That in Isaiah 45 verse 3, when it says, you know, God gives us the treasures of darkness, I realized that, wow, God, you know what? This is such a bizarre, bewildering, overwhelming experience. I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to mine it. So in those days of where I was being hospitalized in the intensive care unit, when I was, you know, in excruciating pain, I actually lost function of my fingers. I had limitations in typing, in writing, in cooking, in exercising. And I had this pain that went from my neck to my fingers. I just felt like God was putting His finger on the things in my life which I had tied my identity to, because, you know, my right hand is why I do everything I love with. And so God used that situation to remind me that He cares so much more about who we are and our characters, way more than what we can ever do for Him. And so when I was laying in bed, when I was stuck on my hospital chair, not preaching, not exercising, not typing, I couldn't even read at one point because just looking down would hurt. I just knew that God was doing it in a work in my life. And, you know, after the surgery, Josh, I wish I could tell you, like, I just sprang up and out of my hospital chair. And the funny thing was, I was connected to other people who had gone through the same surgery in the hopes that I would get support. But the worst thing was, the people I talked to who had the same surgery or worse than me, they felt better right the next day. And one of them even told me they didn't need physiotherapy. Whereas I had to go through almost 12 weeks of physiotherapy before I could live pain-free. All that to say that God needed those 12 weeks to work through those stubborn layers of my life. That high achieving, you know, hustle, striving person who just wanted to maximize everything she had. God just wanted me to understand that He wanted me to work from the sharp end. And as if that wasn't bad enough, Josh, on the 12th week mark, when I was supposed to be resuming normal activities, I suffered a physiotherapy-induced knee injury. And when the doctor did the MRI and told me that the physiotherapist had torn my meniscus, I was devastated. I couldn't walk properly for a number of weeks. And I just went back to God again and said, God, this is like one storm after another. Do you just not want us to go to Tanzania? Do you just not want us to go overseas? Like, what is this? And one thing that I learned is that it's through the bewilderment of the storms that God gives us opportunity to see what He's doing in our characters. And through all those dark times, all I knew was that God had never left me. So even right now, I think this week is the first week I was actually able to walk completely pain-free. And next week, I'm scheduled to go to the States to speak. God was just challenging me. He just showed me the story of Jonah. Like, you know, Jonah was set for one direction and he turned Jonah in the other direction. And I actually resonated with Jonah's self-righteousness. I thought that my dream was to go to the mission field by this time and do what I got to do, you know. And God was just showing me, like, Waijia, like, I created this book in you. Like, did you not think that I would want you to speak about it or do something about it? And so, like, Josh, even this whole, like, book tour thing to the state, it was so unplanned. All I did was just tell God, like, God, I will avail myself from the 2nd of February to the 21st. And if you avail any opportunities in the States for me, then I will do it. And when that happened, God just started opening one door after another. And it wasn't like a smooth thing. It wasn't like, wow, you know, you are this hot speaker, you are hot stuff, and like you've got all this lined up for you. No, it wasn't like that at all. It was like, nobody knows me. Like, seriously. Like, I'm a nobody in the States, right? Like, I'm really, really nobody. Like, why would anybody want to ask me to speak? And all God wanted me to do was to say yes to Him. So all I did was just avail those dates for Him. Before I knew it, Christine Chain's team asked me to go on a pod. And one thing led to another. They invited me to their conference. So I said, okay, God, if I say yes to this conference, I'll know that you want me to be in California, because that's where it was. And you wouldn't believe it, the conference timing was between the 2nd to the 25th. And so, being the maximizer that I am, I say, God, there's a weekend before that, a weekend after that, you know, can you help me schedule something? And the old me would have just sent out 1,000 emails and say, hello, I'm here to speak, would you have me? But God didn't want that. He just wanted me to pray and be at rest. And remember, by then, you know, I couldn't walk very well. You know, I was still recovering from my neck thing, from my spine. And so God was just using that to remind me not to rely on my own strength anymore. But every time I had the laptop, every time I had walking up on my feet, it was very measured. It was no longer, I'm going to do all I can now. It was like, God, I have these few minutes a day to do what I can for you. How am I going to use it as intentionally as I can? And so when the speaking engagements came in, they were very God-led. I was asked to be a keynote speaker at this conference, at the conference, and I was shocked because I was ready to say no. I was ready to, I mean, the States is so huge. What were the chances that one thing would line up one after another? The weekend before the conference in California, I was asked to speak at LA. And then only last week, I'm just like 2 weeks shy of my trip. I still had a couple of weekends that were not filled. And I was like, okay, God, if there's nothing, I'll fly back. I'm okay with that. The moment I said that, senior pastor of another church in LA contacted me, and I was just floored because he told me, I was like, I'm like, why would you trust me to speak on your pulpit, right? And he's like, you wouldn't believe this, but a pastor in Australia whom you don't even know wrote to me and said I needed to invite you because you'd been in the area. And I was like, this can only be God. And just a couple of days ago when my husband said, okay, the best way to fly back is actually through Canada. And I said, what? Really? We're going to go through your hometown? Because he's Canadian. He's Chinese Canadian. And I'm like, that's kind of not efficient, you know? As you can see, I'm all about efficiency, you know, again. And he's like, Waijia, we're going to be, there's like no straight flight from Bristol anyway. So let's just go through Canada. And it was only after I said yes to that, that the largest TV station in Canada contacted me and asked me to show up for 2 interviews for that recording that was scheduled to be in the days that we would be in Canada. So all that to say that, you know, like Jonah, we all have our own plans. But when God tells us to do something, like he will make it line up. Like sometimes we think, oh God, I'm nobody. You know, up to today, I'm still like, I mean, in different contexts, we will feel like we are nobody. So it's just the truth, right? That's just the truth. So when I'm in the States, I feel like, wow, I'm like a fish out of water, you know. But God showed me through Jonah that Jonah did not need to be like a super qualified like preacher. All he said was like one line, like, you know, 40 days and blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, the whole of this was saved. Like, that was literally the caliber that he didn't have because God wanted his obedience. And so to answer, that's a long answer to your question, but sometimes, you know, God puts these setbacks in our lives. We believe, we got to believe that it's for our good. And when we put our trust to believe that He is good, then we begin to appreciate and see those treasures of darkness that we would otherwise never get to behold had we not opened our eyes to see that, Lord, You are good, even in the dark.
Yeah, that's so good. And that's really helpful for a lot of people, saying that He's good even in the dark, even the setbacks, the difficult things, the depression, you know, the anorexia, everything that you have gone through, that God can start to use your pain for some purpose, and He could walk you through that. Do you think that as we're saying yes to God, and we know that spiritual warfare is going to take place and there's going to be opposition, is there a way for us to prepare for that so we could walk through it and hold on to our identity as children of God and knowing who we are as we walk through spiritual warfare?
Well, Joshua, I'm going to take a leaf from your book. I'm going to say, build yourself with courage. And I think I got to print out something like that banner on my own home. Right? Because like if we're going to shut back, then we're going to be so afraid. But I kid you not, like up to today, I still get the jitters, like, you know, before I do something like so-called significant for God. There's always that sickness that comes up, or that storm that seems to be nearby. And what I found really helpful is to have a group of friends and mentors whom I actually always review on my little list. And I say, who is God showing me to walk with me this season? Because people change and we don't want to hold them like bound to us, right? Forever. So I always have that list constantly evolving. And it's not a long list, but it's like a group of 5 to 6 prayer supporters, prayer warriors. We'll say, YJ, you're going to the state next week. YJ, you're moving. YJ, you're this, you're that. I'm going to be praying for you. Because all this, like the spine surgery, everything unraveled actually shortly after my book manuscript was submitted. And even the publishing team, they were all rallying around me, praying and saying, you know, if it's warfare, then God, we're going to stand in the gap. And so I always encourage people, like, never underestimate the power of community. Because even if you don't feel like you have a community right now, maybe people who are listening right now, a lot of people maybe unchurched or de-churched, you know, not having this steady Christian community, start with one. Because so many people come to me and say, you know what, YJ, we're not like you, we don't have like big, you know, supporting community. But I say, start with one, and from one it becomes two. And honestly, you don't need a lot of people. You need people who will go deep with you in the valley.
You know, we have a hub in East Asia, and we're trying to send Chinese speakers to the rest of the world to send them out as missionaries. And one of the biggest difficulties to be able to do that is the parents of people who say yes and want to go. Right? You know,
I can totally relate, Josh.
Asian parents. What would you say? How do we get to a place with, you know, for us sending Chinese speakers out, and how do we deal with it with parents that are reticent to send and let their children actually go?
Wow. Joshua, you are asking the right person, because the first chapter of my book is When Loved Ones Say No.
And that's why I'm asking you. That's why I'm asking
you. Oh my goodness. That is so hard. Actually, we are walking through right now, and I have to say, it never gets easier. We are walking through that right now because one of our very, very close mentors is extremely against us going to Tanzania. And you know what? Sometimes we got to take that. Because it's not about, somebody told me this and I think it's so true, it's not about how many voices say yes to you. It's not about taking a vote. It's not like a poll. Like, oh, 9 out of 10 mentors say it's okay for me to do this, so I'm going to do it. Sometimes it's that lone voice that really is the voice of God. So we can't do a poll. But what we can do is keep taking one step in front of the other and asking what God show me. And I think one of the main things I have learned is to really wrestle, put ourselves in that wrestling ring with God. Because it's so easy to just say, God, you know what? You allowed me to be under the hierarchy of these parents or mentors. And therefore, if they say no, it will be no. Sometimes I think people use that as a cop-out. And I want to call it out because when King Herod demanded that all the baby boys be put to death, that the midwives did not obey, Moses' parents did not obey, was it because they were rebellious and anti-God? No, it was precisely because they loved. And so I think we need to remember that while those moments shouldn't be everyday, daily moments, like if we are walking in a practice of rebellion and defying authority, that is a problem itself. But if we are walking in submission on a consistent basis, then we got to look for those Moses moments and say, you know what? If I just give in to the cop-out that, hey, you know, my parents or my mentor just said that, oh, it's a little dangerous or it's kind of risky, then I'm not going to do this, then we lose the opportunity to live that adventure with God and the legacy behind it, because look what Moses did. So when it comes to parents when it comes to the Asian continent, it is very complicated. Like families can be very enmeshed. But I believe even in the American, like Western context, I think many of us will face opposition. The way to go around it is there is no easy way. There is a lot of navigation. There's a lot of tech involved. It's not as easy as walking away from that mentor as well and just say, I don't care about you. Because God is about relationship. I think it's about being tactful and sensitive and just remaining open to say, you know what? I really appreciate your advice. I'm going to take it very seriously and I'm going to go back to God with ground zero. And that's actually what we did with recently with my knee injury and all. I mean, people were telling us, maybe that's not God's will for you to go to the mission field. And all I said was, you know what? I'm going to go back to ground zero with God with this. I'm not going to say no to you because I don't want to miss out on what God could be speaking about. So I always encourage people, go back to ground zero. Don't cop out. Wrestle with God the way Jacob did. Like the intensity of our wrestling should be like when Jacob wrestled with the angel and saying, God, I will not let you go until you bless me, until you speak to me. And literally, I felt God put my knee out of joint as he did with Jacob because he wanted to give me a new identity of someone who was fully submitted and surrendered. And I see you raising your eyebrows, Josh, because you must be thinking, wow, after the spine operation, wasn't that enough? And I asked the same question to God as well. But clearly, he wanted to go deeper.
Yeah, he always wants to take us deeper, and he takes us deeper and deeper and deeper. And there's also not an end to our submission to him, surrender to him, but there's not an end to his love for us. And he wants all of us because he loves us so much. And he will give all of himself to us as well. It's beautiful. If you could say to your readers, people who read Dream Brave and say, oh, I want to put this into practice, what would you want them to get out of your book? How would you want them to change and live in a new way because of what they have read?
Wow. Thank you for asking that, Joshua. I think the one takeaway I would love people to have is to dare to live by faith, even when you feel too small. That is I think the greatest theme of the book. Even when you feel small, to dare to take that first step forward, because it always starts with the first step. Yeah.
Well, Wajia, if you could go back to your 21-year-old self, what advice would you give?
Yeah. Oh, wow. If I could go back to my 21-year-old self. Oh, John, that would be a very long list. I would say this. Everybody has baggage. Everybody has trauma. Don't let that hold you back. Use that as a launch pad. Because so many people come to me and tell me, Wajia, you don't understand. I'm walking through this. I have so much anxiety. I have insomnia. I have depression. I have an injury. There are so many things. I am not like you. And I always remind myself, people ask me for advice, that use that as a launch pad. Remember Joseph. Remember he had to go to the pit and the prison before he could take the palace. And God did not use the palace to compensate him for the bad in his life. God actually meant all of that because the pit and the prison were what Joseph needed to be launched into the palace. Yeah.
That's so good. That's really, really good. Anything that you've been reading or watching lately you could recommend?
Oh, a lot of great titles again. I will go with my current read, which is Walking Through Pain and Suffering by Timothy Keller. Also, while we're at it, Counterfeit God by Timothy Keller, because our dreams can very easily become our idol. They can very easily become something we enamor and immerse ourselves into, that they can take precedence over God. And we might not even realize it. It's so insidious, but one thing can lead to another. And so I think Counterfeit God, it's a really good read for people to discern those idols in their lives and the different forms that they take. And Walking Through Pain and Suffering, of course, is a good read about how we can navigate those trials in our lives that God gives to us in His love.
Those are great recommendations. Really, really good. How can people go out and get your book, Dream Brave? And where can people connect with you if they want to connect with you?
Oh, thank you, Josh. I am most active on my Instagram. So that's at TamWaijia, TamWaijia. I also have a website called kitedreams.org. That's kite, K-I-T-E, and dream.org. People can get their book. They can pre-order on Amazon at the moment. And the book will be released on the 30th of January in America and worldwide. You can get it from your local bookstores as well as on Amazon or wherever books are sold from the 30th of January onward.
Great. Well, I hope a lot of people get your book. I really love this conversation that you were open, that even in the setbacks and the hardships, the difficulties that you have been faced, you said yes to God. You took those small steps and then big things started to happen. I used to say that as a basketball coach. I said, if you do the little things right, big things will happen. And so I love that with these big dreams that we have, that we just want to start small. We want to discern God's voice. And you did a great job of pulling in five different ways for us to be able to discern God's voice as we're hearing and we're seeing our circumstances. We have mentors and people in our lives to be able to do that. We have aligned with scripture. And so thank you for walking us through that. Thank you for walking us through a place of total surrender and faithfulness to God, even when you have, you know, spinal surgery and your knee is then messed up and your God is giving you a deeper understanding of reliance on Him. And so I love that you went from hustle into rest and that God would start to work through the rest that you have in Him, and knowing that He is faithful, He is there with us, and He can actually do it. So thank you for this conversation. I really, really loved it. So I really want to say, I pray that God will move you in the direction that He wants to move you in, whether it be Tanzania, whether you get there or not, that I just pray that you still have that light at your feet, that you could walk in His ways and say, I will do what you want, God. So thank you for this conversation.
Wow. Thank you, Josh. It was so much my privilege and pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you want to see more episodes like this, go to patreon.com/shiftingculture and become a monthly patron of the show. You can help us produce more episodes so that we could see the body of Christ look more like Jesus. If you become a patron on patreon.com/shiftingculture, you will get early access to episodes. You will get episode guides. You will get bonus shows, hopefully, and more. So go to patreon.com/shiftingculture and become a monthly patron. Also, leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out and helps us find new listeners to the show. And just go and share this podcast with your friends, your family, your network, people that you think would enjoy it as well. Thank you again for listening to the show. I hope you have a great week.